This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for Monday, the 27th day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities. He's in Normal, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County will tell us a little bit about what's been happening in the agricultural cash grain market. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with the guys up at Earthrest Technologies. And we'll hear from Daryl Good. As you know, the price of corn has slipped dramatically. He says, well, the trade may be just a little too premature in that move. All that happens during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Yeah, the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. Brace yourself if you're a farmer, because futures were sharply lower. Corn pit was down 19.5 cents at $3.73. December at 383.5, 19.25. The March at 394.25, down 18.5. And July down 17.5 at 405.25. December corn crop at for next year at 396, down 13 cents. I should probably say brace yourself if you're a farmer and don't have much sold yet. August soybeans down 30 cents at 9.61 1/4. September at 9.39 1/4, down 28 cents. November beans 9.33 1/4, 31 3/4 lower. January 31 1/4 lower at $9.39.5. And the March down 29 3/4. Next year's November 23 cents lower, $9.50. The trade there. Bean meal futures on the day down $10.60. The bean oil 30 cents lower at $30.11. September soft red winter wheat down 9 1/4 at 5.02.5. December down 8 at 5.11 3/4. The hard red 8 cents lower at 4.99 1/4. December at 4.19 1/4, down 8 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby August 22.5 cents higher at 143.25. October at 144.10, down 2.5. Feeders in the August at 208.55, down $1.12.5. September down $1.52.5 at 206.25. Lean hogs 2.5 cents lower at $77.65 per 100 pounds in the August. The October at $63.90, 12.5 cents lower. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The crude oil for the day in the September contract at $47.33 a barrel, down 81 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.44.5, a nickel and a tenth lower. Gasoline on the RBOB at $1.81.6. That's a penny and 2/10 of a cent lower. And heating oil or diesel fuel down 3 7/10 at $1.59.2 of a cent. Natural gas for the day at $2.79.3, a penny and 7/10 of a cent higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down just about 164 points now at 17,359. The U.S. dollar at 96.6, that's down 0.736. And the gold futures on the day at $1,094.50 are up $9. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 20% chance of showers, partly sunny. A high of 85 on an east-northeast wind at 3 to 5 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of, 71 degrees. East winds at 5 to 7 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high of 90. Heat index values tomorrow at 103. Light and variable winds out of the southeast at 6 miles an hour. And then tomorrow evening, a 30% chance of rainfall after 2 a.m., partly cloudy, a low of 73. Calm winds turning to the south-southeast at about 5 miles an hour after midnight on Tuesday night. On Wednesday, that'll again bring us a chance of thunderstorms before 2 in the afternoon, partly sunny and a high of 89. South-southwest winds by then at 6 to 9, and they'll turn to the northwest. That should cool things down Wednesday night to about 64 degrees, and we'll go to a sunny high of 83 on Thursday, clear and 63 Thursday night, and sunny and 84 on Friday. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday. It's the 27th day of July. Kurt Kimmel is here. We talked to you this morning, Kurt. Surprised at that point that the marketplace had dropped and you had to watch tick by tick. Fortunately, I did not. The market go lower. What caused corn and soybeans to be so dramatically lower down today? What, nearly 20 cents in December corn, November beans down almost 32 cents.
Well, there, yeah, I was supposed to be at the Champaign County Fair the first couple of days this week, but no, I'm in the office, so it was torture. Especially if you, like you've mentioned earlier, is you still have some cash grain to sell. It's one of those deals where straight up, straight down. Our best idea here is commodity funds were a little bit too extended to the long side. For example, on corn, they were estimated to be long over 270,000 contracts of corn over the last couple of weeks, from a net short of 80-90 to that big of a long position. Now they're going through the liquidation process. Estimates are that they sold about 30,000 contracts of corn going into midday, 14,000 beans, and about 4,000 wheat. Technical signals are negative. End of the month, Friday, so, you know, they're searching for some type of reason to stop selling, and that's not going to happen until we see some stability, give them some neutral signals in through here. But fundamentally, Asia continues to be a concern. Fundamentally, this afternoon's crop condition report is probably going to show stable conditions in corn and a slight improvement in the beans. But is that going to add a bunch of bushels onto the crop? I don't think so, but we're fixing to find out here as we move down the road.
You know, 30,000 bushels at 150 million, or 30,000 contracts at 150 million bushels. I have to say, I wonder whether that's worth 20 cents or not, but maybe the trade, I guess, thinks it is. We'll see in the overnight trade. Is there any expectation this will continue as we move through tonight?
Well, we'll definitely see a little follow-through from margin call liquidation or so. But corn, 71 cents off the high, and that's happened in just a matter of 2 weeks. Beans are $1.12 off the high. That's these corn November beans. As we mentioned this morning, we're kind of back to where we kind of broke out to the upside here. This Dease corn, this 382, 385 area, that was resistance there for about 2 months. We popped through it and we started going. The November beans, we broke below 930, consolidated sideways for a little over a month, and we broke back above 930 and off we went. So those are our two best numbers to kind of watch. Ideas are, when you look at the fundamentals back then and the fundamentals now, the carryout estimate we believe is smaller now versus then. So we'll see what develops here. You got to respect the market action. It kind of reflects on marketing plans and trading plans to be flexible and kind of have some staying power intact, because when you get roller coaster moves like this, it's not very pleasant.
It's not pleasant, but there are advantages that or opportunities, I suppose, for some to move into the marketplace. I would think end users might begin to be interested in these lower prices.
Very much so. Talking to some of the commercial guys, they're kind of relieved, and they've been stepping into this, getting some coverage on. It's one of those deals where I don't want it to come back and get me again, because we don't have the crop, you know, fully mature yet, and the crop's not in the bin just yet. And so this offers a buyer some opportunity to get that coverage on.
Do you think they should?
We believe so. We kind of felt that these corn futures, this, you know, 375 to 475 would be kind of a trading range, so we're kind of back near the lower end. And there's some creative ways you can get that coverage on without a whole lot you can get some coverage on with your risk known. For example, you can buy the futures, same time buy a put option to cover it. That way you've got some staying power. Option volatility and premiums has come down dramatically here this week, so you can come in and do some call options to get some coverage on. There's several ways to get some coverage on, but yet take advantage if the market does move a little lower yet.
And you're advising this for livestock producers as well?
I would think so. Probably more so in the cash. We're looking at some fairly, basis firmed up a little bit because you're not going to see a whole lot of guys sell 350 cash corn. But that's where the advantage is. If you can lock in some cash corn here at these lower levels, because once we get into fall and through here, the stuff gets storage up. We look for a seasonal increase in cash basis levels into middle of December.
And what's the trade thinking about the crop progress report yet this afternoon due out at 3 o'clock Central?
More of the same. We're going to see probably a steady corn, good to excellent number. Beans could improve maybe 1% to 3%. It's going to be highly variable when we go from state to state. You get Missouri, Illinois on the east, you're going to continue to see that poor to very poor, not improve a whole lot. The good to excellent category, Iowa, Minnesota, and Dakotas, it's about as high as it could be. I don't know, how much higher that could climb in through here, but it's probably going to fall in what trade expects, but where we go from here is going to depend on the commodity fund action, better yet, the European trade at early morning hours in that 2:30, 3:30 morning area.
Well, I suppose. Will you be up to watch that?
No.
I wondered. I thought if you mentioned it, I thought maybe you might be all right. Well, you try to get a good night's sleep, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks so much.
Very good, Todd. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and joins us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what's happening in today's agricultural news. We'll start in Washington, D.C. On tap for the U.S. House Agriculture Committee this week are two public hearings. The full committee on Wednesday will tackle the Dodd-Frank Turns 5 reform. And on Thursday, the Subcommittee on Livestock and Foreign Agriculture will hold another hearing examining the federal and state response to avian influenza. July has been a busy month for the House Ag Committee as the full chamber passed the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Bill, known as the SAFE Act, last week. The Senate is working on similar legislation, but the topic for the Senate ag lawmakers has been country of origin labeling, with two bills introduced last week, one to repeal COOL, another to make it voluntary instead of mandatory. This showdown in the Senate is happening right now, just moments after a bipartisan group of ag senators introduced a hybrid repeal voluntary COOL labeling bill. Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Pat Roberts went to the floor to introduce full repeal alone.
It doesn't matter if you support COOL or if you oppose COOL. You cannot ignore the fact that retaliation is imminent and that we must avoid it. Repeal of mandatory COOL is necessary to protect the U.S. economy from damaging sanctions, and our amendment will accomplish just that.
That's $3.2 billion in retaliatory tariffs by Canada and Mexico after four WTO rulings that U.S. COOL is discriminatory. Canadian officials threatened again after former Agriculture Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow introduced her bipartisan voluntary COOL bill. This is Roberts' answer.
Some have suggested that we should salvage this labeling program by once again making more changes. However, simply changing certain aspects of the program will not prevent the $3.2 billion in retaliation from damaging our economy.
Roberts says the only way to stop immense damage to U.S. produce and manufactured goods is to first take up full repeal, like the House passed with 300 votes. Otherwise, many states, he says, will suffer huge damage.
California alone has $4 billion in exports to Canada at risk. Florida, Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin each have roughly $1 billion in exports from their state at risk from Canadian retaliation alone.
House Agriculture Chair Mike Conaway offered an olive branch, saying he would work toward a bipartisan voluntary labeling program if the Senate passes full repeal first before the long August recess. We'll stay in D.C. and with the Senate for just a moment. Senator John Haven of North Dakota says he will not introduce a biotechnology labeling bill until the fall. Republicans and 45 Democrats voted for the bill in the House that would stop states from labeling foods with genetically modified ingredients and establish a voluntary non-GMO labeling program administered by USDA. Haven says he doesn't know if the House bill will pass the Senate, but that he does not yet have a bill that would pass the Senate. Now, elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Department of Agriculture is partnering with Microsoft to launch the Innovation Challenge, a contest designed to explore how climate change will impact the United States food system with the intent of achieving better food resiliency. The challenge invites entrants to develop and publish new applications and tools that can analyze multiple sources of information about the nation's food supply, including key USDA data sets that are now hosted on the Microsoft Azure, Microsoft's cloud computing platform. That association meeting, of course, will be filled with academics from across the United States, speaking of which a significant effort to sequence a large number of soybean germplasm lines is now underway. The project is being funded by the United Soybean Board and three private companies, Bayer Crop Sciences, Dow AgroSciences, and Monsanto. A lab at the University of Missouri is coordinating the research. It is the first large-scale public-private partnership of this magnitude in the soybean genetic research arena. And finally today, we'll move south to the state of Louisiana, where Investimus Forest is buying assets of the former Vanguard Synfuels refinery in Pollock as a site for its new facility. The company plans to build an ammonia plant. The plant will produce 500,000 tons of ammonia per year for agricultural use. Most of it will be shipped by pipeline to destinations in the northern United States. The company is also exploring foreign export markets. Construction is expected to start in the second quarter of 2016. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know the price of corn has dropped because the trade believes there will be plenty of it around. However, farmers, they're not completely convinced, especially east of the Mississippi River. The price of corn in Chicago increased about 90 cents a bushel from mid-June to mid-July. That increase was driven by a combination of smaller-than-expected USDA estimate of the June 1st stocks and production concerns stemming from record June rainfall in much of the eastern Corn Belt. Over the past 2 weeks, corn futures prices have declined nearly 65 cents a bushel as production concerns have subsided. Today, the trade thinks, based on the price, the amount of corn available for the next year will be more than needed. There are a couple of ways this could change. University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good says a tighter supply and demand balance sheet for the coming year could be generated by a tighter supply of old crop corn carried into the new marketing year.
Based on the current pace of ethanol production, for example, the use of corn for ethanol production during the current marketing year could be about 10 million bushels more than the current USDA projection. Similarly, exports could be slightly larger than the projection if Census Bureau export estimates for June, July, and August exceed the USDA export inspection estimates, as was the case in the first 9 months of the marketing year. However, for carryover stocks to be lower than the current projection by enough to meaningfully alter the 2015 supply and demand balance would require larger than expected feed and residual use of corn during the final quarter of the marketing year.
This won't be known until the grain stocks report is released in September. That's on the 30th day. A tighter supply and demand balance sheet for corn could also result from larger than expected consumption during the year ahead. Such a development would obviously take time to unfold, but opportunities for consumption to exceed the current projection appear to be limited, thanks Good. and this leaves the size of the crop in the ground as the primary lever by which prices might be pushed higher.
The average yield expectation appears to be near 165 bushels, 1.8 bushels less than projected in the July 10th USDA WASDE report. Based on the projection of 81.8 million acres harvested for grain, a yield of 165 bushels would result in a crop of just under 13.4 billion bushels, or about 150 million bushels less than projected in the July WASDE report. Still, if 2015 marketing year consumption is near the current USDA projection, year-ending stocks would be abundant, very close to 1.5 billion bushels. On the other hand, a yield forecast of 161 bushels or less would likely be sufficient to push prices back to the mid-July highs.
Recent corn price declines indicate, says Darrell Good, that the market is removing the production risk premium from the price structure in anticipation of another year of surplus. The question, then, is whether the removal is premature. The USDA's crop production report to be released on August 12th will contain the first survey-based yield and production forecast for the 2015 crop.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. On the phone line from the Andersons is Carolyn White. Good afternoon to you, Carolyn. Thanks so much. I don't know whether the phones would have been ringing off the walls there or been completely silent today. Which was the case?
completely silent. Not too many. I think word must have gotten out. Nobody wanted to know what the markets were doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, what an awful day, I suppose. And I don't know. I don't know that there's a good explanation other than maybe the funds were really long. Have you been able to find anything out?
Well, you know, we had better rains, I think, over the weekend than had anticipated. The Western Corn Belt had some good rains. The Commitment of Traders report on Friday did show the funds a lot longer than what they had thought. And we also got some bad economic data out of China. Just wasn't anything good out there today, and when the funds begin to bail, the door just isn't big enough.
Yeah, they're not longer than they thought anymore.
Well, that will be interesting to see what they did get rid of today, but anyway, it was not a good day in any commodity, that's for sure.
Did your basis widen out as we went down or narrow up?
Actually, our basis is going to be a little better as we go home this evening, so I would anticipate with the board being down as much as it is, we'll see that across the way here, but definitely our basis got better tonight.
And what are your bids like at the moment?
Our cash bid here at the Andersons for corn, 365. New crop would be 367 on corn. For soybeans, cash 973, new crop 913, July wheat 472, and next July, I don't think we have a bid posted just yet.
That's okay. Hey, thanks so much, Carolyn. I appreciate you taking your time this afternoon.
You bet. Hope tomorrow is a better day.
It should be. Carolyn White, of course, is with the Andersons. She's from right here in Champaign County. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to take a look at the agriculture weather forecast with the guys at EarthRisk Technologies. Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming each and every day, not long after it airs on our radio stations.
It's National Scotch Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1586, Sir Walter Raleigh brought the first tobacco to England from Virginia. In 1880, A.P. Eborn patented a method for refining coconut oil. In 1910, large hailstones fell in Todd and Wadena counties in Minnesota, some weighing as much as 5 pounds. In 1918, the first concrete barge was launched into Flushing Bay, New York. Its hull was made of steel-reinforced concrete, and it was designed to carry oil.
The barge was 98 feet long, 31 feet wide, and 9.5 feet deep. In 1931, a swarm of grasshoppers destroyed thousands of acres of crops in Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota. The cornfields were totally destroyed without a stalk left standing. Those who experienced it said that it was not an exaggeration to say that the grasshoppers were so thick that you could scoop them up in a shovel. Motor travelers had to roll up their windows to keep them from raining in on their feet. In 1931, Auguste Henri Fourel was born. The next time you are at a picnic and become overtaken by ants, think of him. He wrote a 5-volume work titled The Social World of the Ants. And in 1940, Bugs Bunny made his screen debut in A Wild Hare. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It is a Monday afternoon. Let's check the weather forecast across the growing regions around the planet. John Davis is here. He's with Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago. John, thanks for taking the time. Tell me about the weather conditions in the Midwest first.
Well, really, in the Midwest, the biggest news over the weekend is that in the northwest portion of the Midwest, we got very good rainfall over the weekend, and that had been an area that was turning on the dry side. They have gotten very little rain the last 2 to 2.5 weeks, and that area of northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, and eastern South Dakota got very widespread and very significant rainfall here over the past 3 days. And it looks like more is on the way, so certainly a very beneficial situation for those areas. As we look ahead to the future, it looks like that after a pretty warm couple of days across the Midwest, we are going to be cooling down initially to more normal type levels by the weekend, and then actually going below normal even after that next week and toward the middle portion of August, as we have a pretty significant pattern change taking place across the central U.S. that will mean cooler temperatures across basically all areas here, including the Midwest. And as for rainfall, most areas have a very normal type of rainfall profile coming up, so pretty favorable conditions across the Midwest.
And summer has arrived, and it looks like we've gotten rid of the heavy rainfall. Any reason for that to return at the moment in the offing at all?
No, there are some areas that are getting some heavier rainfall, but that's kind of confined to Florida and certainly not in the central U.S. So the feed of moisture, which had been such a persistent feature from the Pacific Ocean into the middle of the country, really for the last 3.5 months, that feature now is kind of in a different orientation. And so you're no longer getting the trajectory of moisture flowing from the Pacific Ocean right into the middle of the country. So with us, you're not getting those very heavy rainfall totals.
Okay, turn your attentions to other growing regions across the planet. Do we have problems, for instance, in India that need to be dealt with?
In parts of India, not the northern areas and certainly not the soybean areas, but in the southern sections of India, places where we would grow, you know, cotton or rice, sugar cane, some groundnuts, those areas have had very poor monsoonal activity over the past couple of weeks and have been very hot. So it's a very extreme situation across India. Some areas are in very good shape, some areas are not in good shape, and it's all in the southern areas of India.
Other places you've been watching across the planet we need to keep track of?
Europe continues to have a very warm bias. It has now switched from Southwest Europe to Southeast Europe, and the Balkans and parts of the Ukraine have had very hot weather here over the last 10 days and limited rainfall total. So those areas continue to have issues here across areas of Southeast Europe.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Do appreciate it.
My Pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. John Davis is with Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow throughout the day. You can find our programming on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Everything from the opening market report to the closing market report posted not long after it airs on our radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason.